Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches,
as well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Bonus episode for you all. Obviously, we've got loads going on at the moment. We had National Cross last weekend. We had Bucks Indoors. We had all sorts. I can't even remember, Matt. We had the Birmingham Grand Prix. This weekend coming, we've got Barrowford 10-miler, whereas Emil's going for the record. We've got European Indoors. Everything's going down, so we thought we'd sort of do a review and preview episode for what's been going on and what's coming up.
Absolutely. First up, I just got to say big thanks to Lum for coming on the podcast today. He's under the weather. He claims his wisdom teeth are coming through. He's a bit worse for wear, so I hope he can get through the podcast all right.
Yeah, let's pretend like I actually get a word in edgeways anyway. But I'll let you lead this one, mate. Yeah, I am here on my deathbed. I was actually also down for Trafford 10K on Sunday myself. So I don't know. We'll be going through the quickest athletes on the start list, but maybe I won't be there. So maybe that will shake things up a bit at the front. Who knows?
I mean, yeah, hampering your Manchester Marathon preparations just a little bit. Yeah, don't forget Lum is doing Manchester Marathon. What is it, week before London, Lum?
Yeah, 16th of April. So not long to go now. I think I'll check it now, but I think on my phone countdown, 1 month and 14 days.
6 weeks.
That is coming in hot. So it's about time I had a little blip in the training. It's been going too well to me. I don't want to run too quick on my debut. Upset a few people.
Absolutely, mate. Right, talking about running too quick, we'll start with Birmingham Indoors because it seems like that was the furthest competition we had. But Kelly Hodgkinson clearly dominating the 800. She's down, obviously, for the 800 at Euros as well, which I think she's just going to destroy. Enjoying her indoors. There's really not much to report on Keely. We're just getting used to her just winning these 800s. But we, I am aware, Lum, that she is kind of, I think she was chasing that British record, but I think she's chasing a sub 157. She looks like she's chasing a real big performance in there. I think Trevor came out and said she's got a big performance in her. Training's going very well. Do you think perhaps probably, chasing the time a little bit too much given the time of year, Lum?
Yeah, potentially. I think my only kind of worry with Keely is obviously we saw in the summer where she was running so well. And then when it came to the champs themselves, not that she underperformed in that she came away with, 3 medals. But she didn't quite reach sort of the peaks we'd hoped for her. And I think especially going into this Euro Indoors, it's definitely hers to lose. And I think that does add some pressure, particularly when if you're trying to pop like a quick time. I don't know. I just hope she doesn't sort of like aim for a time in that final and then end up kind of like unraveling because she's too focused on that rather than just winning what would be like a major actual win.
I think at the moment, to be fair to Keely, I think she's so far ahead of the rest of the opposition in the world, let alone Europe, that she can go out and she can run 157 on her own. Like, she's had paces in these races, but in quite a few of them, the paces have kind of been ahead anyway. I don't think it helped her that much. And she is the kind of woman, I think, who can just front run these times. And 800s, they are kind of easier to front run anyway. So I think she does go for a time. I don't think there's any question if she's going to kind of fade. But I just mean maybe perhaps looking ahead to outdoors. I think Moo's keeping her cards very close to her chest. Change coaches and stuff as well. Mary Mora doesn't seem to be having a good indoor season, but you never know what she's going to be able to do outdoors as well. So it's just, but what I do enjoy is that fact we are seeing her week in, week out, Lum, and she is racing at a very high level. And I think she's actually being quite smart. It is really driving her kind of publicity and recognition of who she is.
Yeah, not that I think that she's gonna necessarily fade. It's just but I think you can't take these titles for granted a bit because I think in the probably like the commies maybe we probably had already given Keeley the title before. And I'm not saying there's kind of anyone as close as we had then, but just these Euros, I think it's just it'll be good for her to tick that box and make sure she gets the win more than anything. But going into the summer, like I think the type of athlete she is in terms of like a speed based athlete and sort of from the outside in what the training looks like. If you look at the likes of like Femke Bol, obviously running like world records indoors recently, that's sort of, I know the 400 is different to the 800, but these are the top athletes and they can perform indoors going into out, I think, over 800 meters. Whereas if you're more of a maybe a 5K, 1500, it's probably a bit more difficult to have those peaks at indoors.
Yeah, I suppose you're right there, to be fair. I mean, look, we'll get onto our Euro indoor preview, but we'll just continue reviewing that Birmingham indoors. Neil Gawley, super impressive. That was a good race, that 1500. Obviously Josh Kerr taking it out, and perhaps something I feel like we're seeing every now and again with Kerr. He sort of comes into certain races very hyped up. In contrast, Milrose Games, he kind of let everyone else do the work and then won the race. In Birmingham, he turns up and he states he wants to go after a good time. He's clearly in good shape and he kind of set the race up for someone else to go and run, British indoor record in Neil Gawley as well. And, so perhaps maybe a little bit too confident from Kerr. And I feel like we've seen it a couple of times now. And he definitely runs his best when he's keeping a low profile, I think, and kind of even in the race, treating the other runners with respect as opposed to kind of chasing the time.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Gawley's tweaks. Gawley kind of posted afterwards about how last year he sort of did the same thing, kind of came out saying he was aiming for the record, ended up running real bad. This year kept quiet about it, and obviously he did run that record. Whereas Kerr was the one kind of aiming for it. What I would say though is that you mentioned with Keeley sort of like almost increasing her stock value in terms of publicity and things like that. I do think Josh Kerr's quite smart in that he almost, I feel like he looks at other sports like boxing, MMA, that sort of thing, and tries to bring in some of the hype before. And like he might be calling people out or acting like he's showing no respect, but he's not really. It's more just trying to build some sort of stuff on Instagram. And I think in terms of for his image, I think it's good. But like you say, if as long as we're still going to get the good performances out of him from it, but I do think it's exciting to see people kind of going out and saying, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna shoot for that time." And I do think it's good for the sport in that sense. But like you say, like I'd still rather see Josh Kerr at his best rather than kind of hyping stuff up. But hopefully, we can see him marry the two together and do both at some point.
Which I feel like he does do, when it counts. And you could argue that this kind of Birmingham indoors doesn't really count. But one thing's for sure, Gawley's in incredible shape. And we haven't seen much of Jakob this winter, by the 1500 very early. I actually think Gawley, people are banging on about Yared Nuguse. And I know Nuguse ran that terrific mile in Millrose, but Gawley's 1500 at Birmingham was probably just as impressive as Nuguse's in Madrid.
Oh, it's
And I'm
just
just
the mile gets so overhyped indoors. It like the time equivalence is irrelevant. It's but yeah, I don't
I feel like
like Gawley is easily is in as good shape as Nuguse right now.
also I feel like Gawley's been building into the season, whereas Nuguse was clearly in incredible shape, Boston, then Millrose. And it looks like Madrid, he was kind of, I mean, he still looks super impressive, but no more impressive than Gawley in Birmingham. And I feel like it's going to be an interesting matchup because even if Jakob takes it out I mean, that race on Saturday, I think they went to 56 first lap. Jakob's not taking it out quicker than that. And Gawley was still there and able to kick off of it and run 3:32. If Jakob's not at his best, he's going to find it hard to run to, we know he can front run a 3:30, 3:31, but if Gawley's right there, it's going to be interesting to see, who's got that turn of pace because we know Gourley has, and we haven't really seen that change of pace from Jakob, more of a kind of gradual build.
Yeah, Jakob has got those Dragonfly 2s prototypes we've been seeing all
week. I mean, Gourley's got some big old Under Armour spikes I saw in a picture, so I don't even know what they, you know, there's so many new spikes coming out now that I don't think we, the public, have even seen half of them.
Mm, especially those on spikes and the gooses in.
I don't know when we're supposed to be getting hold of those. Well, the public, so we can have a look. But and then finally, mate, Laura Muir just missing that 1K world record. It continues to haunt her, no matter kind of what shape she comes in, no matter how many times she tries now. I feel like that's been maybe 3 years she's not in a row, but she's attempted that 1K record 3 times now and hasn't got it. What's your thoughts of even kind of, you know, I know she's going to race a 1500 this week, but is there any need to kind of try and go for a 1K world record?
Yeah, I mean, I think
it looks weak. The record looks weak, but it's clearly not if she struggled to get it 3 times.
It is quite a different, like, it is a lot further than the 200 meters from an 800, I think, 1K.
Well, put it this way, could Keely do it? Because 234, is it? 234.0, I'm saying? Pretty sure Keely could do that quite comfortably, but
I don't know, I just don't see Keely doing those. Like, I need to see more of her, like, over, like, 1500 to even comment, sort of thing.
Mm.
Like, I just, who knows? Because it is a lot. Like, that extra 200 meters is huge.
I just think if you said to Keely, go run a 201 and then close in like a 30.
Yeah. I know it's slightly different because, like, we're men and we have, like, slightly different, like, physiology and stuff. But think about, like, when you've run like a 157 compared to like a 2 flat, you're probably just as tired when you're younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even though it sounds like slower, it's still close enough that, do you know what I mean? But it must be different. But I don't know.
It's a really tricky record because I think it looks easier. It looks a lot easier than it clearly is. Mate, so, you know, moving on to National Cross. An interesting weekend. Neither of us were there, unfortunately, but so watched it on the live stream, which I thought they did actually a very good job. Like, well, the images, at least, of, you know, drone shots and stuff, it painted a good picture of the race, especially in the men's when you had Kingston and Jack Gray going kind of toe for toe, just kind of trading blows, if you like, all over that last lap. And obviously Kingston coming out on top. So I do feel like I got a good viewing of it. And, you know, first, should we talk about perhaps the course and then we'll talk about the competition and then obviously the winners?
Yeah, I think it is a fabulous event, isn't it? Like, I think it's a shame sometimes that it's not seen as the national by, like, a few athletes in terms of, like, I think Liverpool definitely gets the depth in terms of the, like, the top end, just because it's like a guaranteed qualification for a GB team. But in terms of the event itself, like, it's enormous, and it definitely kind of lives up to that national standard. Just like the sea of club vests you get, and we say this every year, but like that start line of like the senior men's and the senior women's, like seeing those numbers and all the club colours, like, it's a fantastic event. I think just the way people turn out for their teams as well is not something we see so much in other events, like across the cross country calendar. It's almost almost that road relays like vibe, but obviously just a lot more important, because I think the road relay is obviously the time of year it is and stuff like that. It's like between seasons, whereas the team camaraderie that you see at the national is kind of unmatched in the UK.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you look at the teams who all medaled, like Leeds, Cambridge and Tonbridge, they really come together and they manage to get all their big runners out. I think that's really good to see. It's really encouraging, and it just, like, highlights that team team aspect. I mean, look, Callum Elson went to the World Cross. Week later, he's doing 12K and did a 2K leg. Week later, he's doing 12K cross country.
Yeah, and we were talking about the travel. Worrying about that as well. It's like he's traveled back from Australia and done it as well. It's not just like the world down the road. So
fair exactly. I think, I think so. You know, we know what the National is about. We know the teams and stuff. I think the venue, I never know how I feel about 6K laps. I think, to be fair, I feel like they can't get it right because we moaned last year when there's too many lap runners or I think it's in Nottingham. There's quite a lot of laps we kind of say about the lap runners. But, you know, I do feel like 2 6K laps, it made it quite, I mean, for the athletes, at least it looked a little bit bleak at times. Spectators obviously kind of had to stay in one position because you're not going to kind of run 2K across a field or whatever to go and cheer people on. So, you know, but I think reports were it was still quite good viewing because you could stay in the same place and kind of see them go around the fields. But I feel like the atmosphere kind of was good at start and finish and looked pretty poor the rest of the way. And I think that's probably a bit of a shame for all those 2,500 men who were perhaps running around on the day.
Yeah, and we did obviously, I saw the bottleneck as well. that's not on really, because I'm not being funny. I know the quicker runners are away, but like every athlete in that race is just as important as anyone else. Whether you come 1,000th or first, you should have this like a fair chance at the experience. But having to stop to like go around a corner is not on, like no matter who it is.
Well,
because I'm not being funny, I think people would have kicked off more if like you say, if like Kingston and Gray and people had to, like imagine something had happened that caused them to have to stop and walk like during the race, everyone would be huffing and puffing even more. And quite right too. But what I'm saying is it's just as important that, I don't know what positions it was, but it's just as much of an issue that it happens to them as it would have been if it had happened to people at the front.
Yeah. I mean, on kind of walking, Should there be a cutoff at the National? Look, British Athletics are making things more elitist. It's tricky with the National. I feel like it's great that anyone can do it. But I do feel like sometimes, you know, if you're a new viewer and you don't really know what the National is about and someone says, this is the National, this is the, you know, the pinnacle of English cross country, and they turn on the stream and they see someone kind of plodding around a corner, how does that look for our sport? But then on the same, you know, and then I guess the other argument is that, you know, I love the National. I can't knock it. And I love the fact that 2,500 people, 3,000 runners, you know, kind of men and women's side do it. And it is very inclusive. And that's kind of what makes it such a spectacle. But I do sometimes think that maybe, you know, having so many people do it, and especially the kind of backmarkers, probably isn't a good... It's a good advert for inclusivity, but it's probably not a good advert to kind of showcase the level. And I think it takes away, if you're a new viewer, kind of take, you don't appreciate the guys at the front as much because you're like, well, they're only up against these, you know, these guys. When I think, you know, the top, we know that the top 50 in that race are comfortably doing sort of 80, 90 mile a week training week in, week out. And we know the level.
It's an interesting one. And I know you're not like saying your opinion is one way or the other. But I do think...
No, not at all. I'm just bringing
the question. So I just want to clarify that for people listening. But yeah, I think that's probably the best bit about the National is you see the contrast, though, between the top level and then the people who are there just turning out for their club. And I think what I was trying to kind of say before as well, both are just as important to that race. And that's what makes the race itself really good. What I would say is, can we not just do... And my brain's not working as best as it probably normally does, but can we not just do like a few small loops at the start?
We've spoke about this before, yeah.
Like if you started with like even like a 1K loop and then go
off. Just kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger, yeah. Which, you know, to be fair, they do.
You should be able to have it, shouldn't you?
Yeah,
Just a load of switchbacks, basically, so that we can just...
Yeah.
And
you know, on the course, I think we've got to shout out Welsh Athletics. I think, you know, they put on incredible cross country venues. Bucks Cross was a huge success.
Yeah.
Cardiff Cross is slowly becoming a very, very kind of good and exciting cross-country race. And I think the course is very appealing to spectators. And then, you know, they hosted their cross champs in Brecon. And again, I saw a map of the course and I just thought, well, you know, it's literally similar thing, 2K laps. And, you know, I know they have a lot less runners, but yeah, 2K laps and much more exciting, lots of switchbacks. You can just see a lot of it and you don't have to go very fast. So, but yeah, I mean, that's the kind of take on the, I guess, the national competition as a whole. But yeah, we got to shout out, you know, Kingston. I was talking to Mark Hookway, in fact, before and after. And Hookway was just saying he should train so well all winter, super consistent. He was even kind enough to let me know a couple of sessions that Kingston has done. And, you know, nothing. I think he had a few during the winter, which kind of jumped out at him. And he thought, wow, that's, yeah, what someone of this caliber and someone who's going to win the national might do. But outside of that, just very, very.
He was 15th as a junior man last year.
Yeah, it's mad. I can't believe he's still only 21.
Yeah.
I know we've had some young national cross winners out there, but he's got to be one of the youngest. We've got to check the record books on that. One of the youngest senior men. I know. I was trying to wreck my brains a little bit, but it's 21 to win a 12K cross country is ridiculous. And I think a note on the competition on Saturday, I think it was the national is always very strong from, I want to say, like, there just seems to be so much depth around kind of 1 to 25 runners. Like the depth's incredible. I think Phil Sesson was 20th. Like,
and also he was fourth leads. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
you want 212
marathon. I don't think it was particularly good run for him. I think London Marathon, even want to be in better shape.
Yeah, even if he's underperforming, that is ridiculous depth for one club.
Yeah, I would say. And I think all the national was missing is perhaps like three or four big cross country names, basically. Both Mohammeds and Emil, and you know, well, we were spoiled last year. I think that's exactly the case, isn't it? So, but I thought it was a very good race, and credit to Kingston because he's had a very, you know, kind of sensible, structured cross country plan, and he hasn't been lured into kind of running Armagh and doing some flashy 5Ks through the winter. He's kind of stuck to his guns, won the Southerns, some sort of downtime, came out and won the national one. Don't know how easy it was for him, but kind of did look like he was able to kind of toy with Jack Gray a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, and obviously, and Sarah Aston on the women's side, like, fabulous run from her to take the victory there. And I think just, yeah, that women's race was great too, wasn't it?
Again, like, it was just a huge opportunity for most of those ladies. You know, and Sarah Aston, that is a massive result for her. You know, and I hope that catapults her career. She's actually been super steady, kind of moving up through the ranks. And, you know, she's always there or thereabouts. But actually to go there and take the title, and it was a similar race in the fact that those two kind of broke away to the latter stages, and she just pushed on and had it on that last little, like, what looked like a little climb. Like, it didn't look crazy hilly, but that was enough to kind of separate the, you know, the winners and the losers, if you like, that little kind of slight gradual uphill towards the end where they came into the crowd. So, yeah, massive, massive credit to her. I mean, Gemma Steele was second. Don't know how she's still doing it. I think she's 37 or 38 years old. But again, like, you know, when we looked back, I mean, we kind of looked at the entries beforehand and we were kind of going through them. And I think virtually the top, you know, 15 bar one or two at Liverpool weren't at the National Cross. So I think when we do talk of cross country, it is, you know, I think the National Cross is the spectacle, but Liverpool obviously brings the sharp end.
Yeah. And I think if you say you win Liverpool, I think you can, I don't think anyone can tell you off for saying that you're the best cross country runner in the nation, or in Britain, obviously. I don't think anyone can argue with that, but yeah, like you say, the spectacle, the event of the national, just has some of the magic that Liverpool doesn't. I think Liverpool's been growing that. It's just so kind of renowned for attracting the best to it. But yeah, national's fantastic.
Surprisingly, because you know, I do feel like there's people like Amelia Quirk, who maybe could have come back from World Cross and won it as well. And we talk about kind of Keely cashing in. and people getting to know her. I do feel like the cross country is similar. If you go around and, you know, have a season where you win a load of cross country races, you're going to be a huge name in distance running circles in the UK. And it's only going to kind of boost your profile. So it's a shame that some people chose, you know, chose not to do it.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, you've got to think if people have been to that. I mean, like, yeah, we're saying like, fantastic that Callum Elson came back and did do it. But I don't think you can criticize athletes who didn't.
Yeah.
It's a big turnaround. You just got to think like the kind of chance of getting niggles and sort of things like by doing all that travel and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like running a tough course. They got to think about kind of their summers and things like that, don't they?
This is it, you know, talking of track season, you're indoors in, we'll kind of go through events, you know, quite swiftly. And again, I think it's an absolute, well, on the men's side, I think it's a very, very wide open competition. I know we've got Jakob in the kind of 15 and 3K, who you'd probably say heavily favourite. But, you know, outside of Jakob in the 15 and 3, it's kind of wide open. And, you know, people like Gawley, Mills, Amos Bartelsma, Ezzedine Habs, these guys are the quickest in there. So, you know, our British guys are kind of, I think they're ranked like, I mean, Gawley's obviously ranked second. There's no Mokatir, no Yadel Machau. And I think Mills is sort of fourth or fifth ranked going in. So you've got Luke McCann as well. So Mills might be a bit further down, but, you know, we could, you know, if all goes well, definitely have one of our guys on the podium, potentially two. But
you know, you look at the women, we could actually clean up. Like eight.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. Like the women's team is so, so strong. Like we could seriously clean up in those events.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, Boffy is pretty sure she was second or third fastest in Europe this year. Keely, obviously, the fastest. Women's 15, Snowden. She's right behind Muir on the, you know, season's best. And then we've got Ellie Baker as well, who's kind of growing in if it's tactical. So we could, you know, and we do, to be fair. You know, history tells us Britain do go and clean up at these at the European indoors. I think one of the widest open races, probably the men's 800. Mark English, Tony Van Diepen, Ordonez from Spain, guy called Thibaut de Smet, who I've only just seen kind of this indoor season. He's the quickest going in, but, you know, it's just guys all running 146 and what's going to split them on the day. I think it's very hard to get it tactically right over 800 as well.
Yeah, I think so, and especially indoors, it's gonna be.
That's what I mean, indoors. Yeah,
seeing like that sort of pushing and shoving that goes on will be really exciting, I think. But then, yeah, is it? I don't know. Is it a shame that we're not seeing more? But then, at the same time, I do think, I don't know. I'm contradicting myself now because I said earlier with Keely that 800s are indoors to outdoors. But then I also see why some 800 runners don't want to venture like too much indoors in terms of champs and things. So I don't know. But yeah, is it a shame we don't kind of see the higher quality over 800? We think back to a few years ago, we obviously had Giles running world records. And now, yeah, like you say, at the Europeans, to think it's sort of like 146, it's sort of the...
Couple of run 145, but yeah, it's just a whole host of 146 and 147s. And, you know, Guy Limoff, what's his chances, do you reckon? 146.3. So again, he's sort of, you know,
on the cusp of a final. He's well in it. I don't think that, especially in an 800, if you make the final, there's no reason why you can't medal.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I just think he's going to have to get it tactically spot on to get into the final, to be honest. From what I've seen from Guy this year, I mean, it's good to see him back. But it is wide open and we haven't really had like a runaway. You know, we haven't seen, usually indoors, we get someone running 143, you know, and kind of running away with races. We just haven't seen that this year at all. So it is wide open. But look, let's talk about Jakob. We haven't seen much of him. Like I said, do you reckon he's going to get the double? You know, 15 and 3K. 3K looks pretty easy for him. I think Sam Parsons might be the next guy.
Yeah.
Like Robin Hendricks. You know, 3K looks a pretty much done deal for Jakob, but the 15, I guess he's got Gawley. And again, not many to contend with.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you there. Like the 3K, like I just can't see him losing that, because there's just so many different ways he can take that down. Like if he wants to, he could just start running away from him, and then they just can't go with it. Like it would be different, I think, if you had like a, I don't know, someone super fast, like speed wise, with the next fastest time. Let's say you had a Whiteman in there, who could it potentially like went super slow, kick off it. But I can't see Sam Parsons doing that. And I don't think Sam Parsons going to break him either. And that's no disrespect to him, but I also think everyone else in that race is probably thinking, wow, this is also wide open for getting a medal here on the European stage. So let's fight for silver and bronze and let Jakob do his thing. I mean, in the 1500, though, like you mentioned the likes of Gourley. I don't think, especially seeing Jakob lose to Whiteman in the summer, I think as a fellow Brit, as a fellow Scot, I think Neil Gourley's going to be like, yeah, I want a piece of that.
Could be his curse, mate. British 1500 meter runners could be Jakob's curse. The only word on Gourley is, you know, his kick at British Champs was phenomenal. I know they were running slow, but yeah, he just has a very, very quick close, and he can get round
Jakob. Speed, and Jakob does not have that.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
One weakness is that like Gourley, yeah. Gourley seems to be the only person in the world who can actually kick in the last 50 meters in indoors. Like, the last bend, and he actually goes again, whereas everyone else is like, there's just not enough time.
Yeah.
But if Gourley is on Jakob, like coming off the final turn, game over, in my opinion.
I'd love to. Westie's. Yeah, agreed. Westie's chance in a 3K of a medal.
Yeah, I think this will be really, really interesting for Westie. I think it's almost like he's made that team now. He's won that British title after a couple second places. And it's almost like he's either going to go right into it and perform like we've sort of kind of seen hints that he's capable of, like straight away. Or not, I suppose. But then I guess obviously it's going to be one or the other. But I just think, yeah, it's going to be tough. He's definitely got the capabilities too. I've seen him do it, like I think I mentioned last week or the other week about European team champs a few years ago, with his clothes. I think his clothes over like the last 800 to a K is really, really strong. But it just depends how the race plays out. Like if Jakob makes it like relatively quick, and they're kicking off a quick pace, I think Westie could do really well. I think if it's a jog fest, I think...
I still think a jog fest, Westie's got a great chance. He's got to be probably the second fastest 1500 guy outside of Jakob in that race. I just think he's brimming with confidence. And not only that, going into this Europeans, I feel like there's absolutely no pressure on the guy. Like, no pressure whatsoever. He's not expected to get a medal. But when you look at that start list, you do, you know, in the entries, you do think, well, he has a very, very strong chance. Mm. And I thought his close at British Champs off of like 64s, 228 last K was very good. I think that's kind of,
I think he is.
That's championship. That's kind of championship shape, to be honest.
I think it's more if I just don't see it if it's like six guys with like 400 to go, like, absolutely hammering it. But I think if they start going with like 800 to go, I think he's in a real good chance.
Yeah, someone we actually haven't mentioned is Adel Machau in there. And you know, you bet money on him kind of getting a medal the way he's been moving over 1500. So
listen, over the years, Machau.
He's a wily old fox, mate. He's a wily old fox. And onto the women, we've mentioned Keely probably enough on this podcast today, so we'll probably skip over the women's 800. But yeah, women's 15, I think we've got three there. We mentioned they are virtually three of the quickest going in: Baker, Muir, and Snowden. So we could see a sweep there from our women, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I also think it'll be interesting to see how Katie Snowden goes, because I think kind of came out after British Champs that she had been a bit ill, during the week, or like the travel and stuff from America. So hopefully she can kind of put in the sort of performance she was putting in like prior to British Champs. She obviously did the job on the day, got herself on the plane. So the main thing is that she performs at the Champs itself.
Yep, that's it. And women's 3K, I'm going to put it out there and probably say this is the best contested race of the whole weekend. Hannah Klein, she's an 8:36 runner. We've obviously got Klosterhalfen, Hannah Nutter and Melissa Courtney. We had her on the podcast, so listen to that if you want to hear kind of, you know, her comeback, if you like. We can call it a comeback. She's been off the kind of like sideline for a few years. And Yasmin Khan, Lum, help me with some pronunciation on Battaglietti.
Nadia Battaglietti, I think.
And you know, and a whole host of girls who are kind of 8:40 or below, and that's where the kind of depth comes from and the competition. So it was very good to see a women's 3K, which is pretty hotly contested. Yeah, a whole host of girls in the 8:40s and, you know, below 8:40. So, and I think, you know, with Klosterhalfen and Yasmin Khan there as well, it's going to be quick.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it was the race of the champs at British Champs, and I think, like you said, it has the potential to be the race of the champs at Euros too. And I just hope that Millie Courtney Bryant and Hannah Nuttall can both be right up there as they kind of showed their class at British Champs, because yeah, I think they're definitely kind of an opportunity there to get in and amongst it. I think obviously Klosterhalfen is the number one standout. You never really know what you're getting with Yasmin Khan, but I expect Klosterhalfen to dictate things, but she's definitely not unbeatable by any means.
Yeah. Right. That's the kind of Euro indoors. This all kicks off tomorrow. Can you believe it? So kind of Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So we can look forward to that. And I think it's tomorrow evening, the first event. I think we've got some 800 meter heats. 1500 heats in the evening as well, and the 3Ks kind of get going on Saturday. So I've only had a quick browse at the timetable, but there's a few more things going down this weekend, Lum. One massive thing which we know has been hyped and we've got to talk about is Emil's kind of breaking 10 mile record attempt, but Andy Bouchard is also in there. Those two are confirmed. It's going to be a head-to-head matchup. Interestingly, was talking with the obviously race director Chris Barnes today, and you know, it's kind of all been geared towards Emil. The date was decided by Emil. The time they're going to run on Saturdays has been decided by Emil. I think they're looking for the evening because it's, you know, weather looks best then. And the distance was actually quite a while ago decided by Emil as well. So, you know, he's the man who's kind of geared towards it, and it's been hyped for, and Adidas are obviously sponsoring it. But Andy Bouchard has thrown his hat in the ring, and he's out at training camp at the moment with Farah. You would have thought he's kind of traveling back sometime soon. As of, I think, yesterday morning, it looked like he was still in Ethiopia. So, you know, is Bouchard going to upset the party, or can you see it? I mean, look, they're hoping to go through 10K in 28:20. And the record's 46:02, which is, I think it works out about 4:34 a mile, which is phenomenal running.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, no butchie, no party. We'll see how it goes. I think if I'm Emil in that situation, I don't think I'd want Bouchard there, because I wouldn't want it to turn into a cat and mouse. But as a spectator and as a fan, putting Bouchard in there makes this even more of a spectacle. I think it's going to be super interesting. Obviously, like I say, Adidas also like releasing like that new colorway, the red Adios Pro 3s as well, that Emil's going to wear, is very much kind of akin to some of the tactics we've seen from like Nike in the past. And I think Emil's clearly in great shape, but he's prepping for London. He's not the sort of person that I think wouldn't be doing it, even though he organized it a while ago. He wouldn't be doing it if he didn't think he could run a time. He's got Canova in his corner. Canova, I'd imagine, has also been the person saying, yeah, I think this date for a 10 miler is what you should be doing. So I think it's super exciting, because I think everyone is excited for Emil's marathon debut. It's just a shame Mark Scott's not making his on the same day, because that would be, I think, a fantastic sort of
potential new era for British marathon running. But yeah, this is, I guess, the first glimpse we're going to have of what Emil might run in London. I know 10 miles and 26.2 is a big difference, but just seeing where someone is in their build-up. But yeah, Bouchard, like you say, he wouldn't be doing it if he didn't think he could run quick or at least compete with Emil for large portions of this race. He's too much of like a high-caliber athlete to just be rocking up for the sake of it.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of same theory that I've had, to be honest, because when you see 28:20 on the face of it, I mean, what did Bouchard run in Valencia? It was around about that, I think, perhaps even a little bit slower. And that was in a Valencia 10K, you know, an all-out race. And, you know, when I heard they were going through that, I said, surely he's not going to hang with it. But I think, you know, yeah, when you've been out in Ethiopia training with Farah, not to say Farah's the athlete he is, but you've clearly been training in good company. The athlete he used to be, sorry, but he's been training in good company and I think he's going to be ready for it. And yeah, look, some people often do a half before a marathon, like, I don't know, 6 weeks out. Is that what we are? 6-7 weeks out. I do think it's a much smarter move. I think you're going to recover so much quicker off the back of a 10 miler. And also, you know, Mill's obviously going to run it a lot quicker. And I think a half takes it out of people more than they think. And I think,
oh, I think the only reason to run a half is to run it at marathon pace or a little bit quicker than marathon pace if it's in a build up. And we've seen that historically. We've seen the athletes who kind of run well at London Marathon each year, the ones who run super quick halves do not back it up at all.
Yeah.
Like, take a look at Josh Griffiths, prime example of someone who seems to get it right. I'm pretty sure when he did his half marathon in the build-up, probably 5 or 6 weeks out from London last year, or not London, sorry, he ran Seville last year. He ran 65 for the half and then ran 2:11 for the marathon. How many of the people we see running 62, 63 pre-London marathon then run 2:15?
2:15. Yeah. See it all too often.
So, yeah, I think really smart move because 10 miles, I think you can really spank it. Whereas, and I think that's the problem sometimes is that probably people are often saying, oh, I'm going to run this half at marathon pace or within myself for a bit. But the occasion gets too much for them and they decide that they want to run harder because they are in good shape because you would be coming into that period of the marathon training. And that's fair enough. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, but I think it's smart for Emil to not even put himself in the position where he'd get carried away. Whereas in a 10-mile, I think, yeah, fair play.
Absolutely.
Go get after it.
I mean, it's going to be very exciting. I'm going to be there commentating in the back of a car. So I've upgraded from the bike. And it's going to be on YouTube after, just very similar format to what Podium Under Lights was, you know, Battersea 5K, whatever you want to call it, was a couple weekends ago. So look out for that, probably, you know, on your screens Sunday morning. And I know they've got, you know, Sports Shoes and Podium are doing some terrific things. They're actually, you know, they've had to get some World Athletics ratified officials to come in to make this record legit if the record goes down. And they haven't just got these people in. These people are getting paid, you know, £100 for their day plus expenses, which, you know, I'm sure if there's any officials listening, they know that that is very unusual, perhaps unrealistic. You know, officials, we rely on volunteers so much in our sport. And I think they're kind of breaking new boundaries with giving back to the people who make these events. And so I think that's just one example of the brilliance that, you know, our partners Sports Shoes and obviously Podium are doing as well. So yeah, credit to them. Now there isn't just the 10 mile, there's also going to be a few mile races go down as well. And so I can bring you
these are stacked.
And a whole host of pacemakers as well. The mile races are quite stacked, to be fair. So I'm just going to load them up. Now, the elite women, we've got Alex Bell, Megha Davies in there, Olivia Mason. So many of the names we've kind of seen all winter, Callie Thackeray. And you're probably looking at that thinking, yeah, it's just, again, maybe, you know, Alex Bell's party, to be honest, to go and just clean up a little bit of prize money. Obviously sponsored by Adidas. And on the men's side, just to, you know, call out a few names as well. McCluckie, obviously saw him off the back of Armagh. Got beat at Bucks indoors though. Which shocked me a little bit. 13:36 at Armagh, getting beat at Bucks Indoor 3K. My brother's doing it. Who else have we got in there? Archie Davies, Luke Duffy. Max Wharton's in there as well. So some pretty solid domestic 1500 guys who I think are all going to kind of chip in and help out with the pacing as well. But just to list off a few paces that are going to help a mill out. We know it's 434 or something per mile. So there's not many guys. In fact, when Barnsley put out the request for paces, I was thinking to myself, I'm not sure how many guys in the UK can even pace that for more than for like through 5K or something, you know? So
well, I thought about saying I'll run a K, mate.
Yeah, I'll run a K.
Yeah. Take my paycheck and I'll run a K.
Well, look, we've got supposedly, okay, don't quote me on it, it may change, but the guys who are going to help through 3K, Rich Allen, Max Wharton, Graham Rush, they're just a few names. Through 5K, Jacob Allen, McCluckey, Ben McMillan. Through 6K, Jamie Crowe's going to stay in. And through 8K is going to be Wheeler, Milner, Abdi Sharif, and Omar Ahmed. So when you count all these names up, there's going to be about 10 people kind of blocking the way for a mill.
Yeah.
And he's just going to be slotted in that pack. So this is going to be very much like almost a carbon copy of Breaking 2. And that's why they called it Breaking 10, obviously. So it's going to be exciting. But finally, Lum, British Athletic selection policy came out today. Oh my goodness, it's caused a right stir.
Yeah, it's caused a bit of a ruckus, hasn't it?
first off, for the world champs this summer.
Like the idea that you should like streamline teams and not take the maximum, particularly as we're a nation that is like one of the best as well, is absolutely ridiculous. Like, I just don't know what they're thinking, to be honest. Like, because we see it so often, and all they're trying to do is make this a really elitist group of like, oh yeah, we'll just take who's on funding, blah blah blah. And it seems like we're just going backwards, because I feel like we'd actually been getting out of this cycle, but it feels like we're going back to that before, where it's going to be whoever's mates with whoever, plus the people who actually run the standards and other things. I'm not being funny. Oh. If you have a standard or you get a World Athletics invite or a ranking invite, you should just go. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost kind of like, well, you know, if you're not on funding, you don't stand a chance, really. It's kind of like, yeah, if you're on funding, we'll take you. But you know, I just think, yeah, given the depth you have, I'd love to ask the likes of Jake Wightman, Laura Muir, ask these people, talk to them about their first team that they made, you know, whether it be Europeans or World Champs, when they got knocked out in the semi-finals of races, okay, when it didn't go their way. They probably, if the selection policy was like it was today, they would not be at these competitions. They would not gain that experience. What would that have done to them kind of transitioning and progressing in the sport? You know, would they have got the exposure? You know, would they have got a taste for it? And I just think, you know, and I just think the knock on, for me, it's the knock on further down, which is huge. You know, those people who make up the numbers of British champs. I mean, indoors is usually always pretty, you know, there's never huge amounts of depth there. Everyone knows that. But I just thought the champs this year was particularly shocking, in a sense that we had people there who were basically going to get selected, and they were just there to show their face, get the race done and finish top two. Almost like they knew because they were going to go. And then on from that, you just had people in the field just kind of, you know, fill in the numbers. You had huge amounts of dropouts. And to be honest, you know, a 5K guy running 1350, a very, very strong 5,000 meter time. Are they going to be motivated to go to British champs? The qualifying standards 1307. They may take a couple of people off world ranking points potentially. You know, I don't think we had anyone run inside 1307. Oh, yeah. I mean, Aitken and Scott, but you know, actually in the summer last year, because they, you know, they ran it indoors, so it almost doesn't count. So, you know, are we, it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, so are these people going to be motivated to go to British champs? You know, I feel like British champs is losing its meaning. We're in a very time centered, you know, running world at the moment, where no one kind of cares about where you've come at British champs. I think that is a big shame, by the way, and I think it should be important, but I don't know. I think the knock on at grassroots is huge with these standards, to be honest. And you know, if you're a runner who's running even 1330, you might just choose to go and do a faster race somewhere else and just not bother with British champs, because let's be honest, the atmosphere is never that great in the summer anyway.
Yeah, it's rough, isn't it, for the athletes, but also like for the spectators as well. Like if you kind of tune into the sport at a world champs and you don't know kind of who the main athletes are, but there's not two or three like British athletes in every event, you're thinking, oh, what's the point in that? Because say we end up with, I don't know, probably three men in the 1500 still. We might end up with like one guy in the 800, one in the 5, like no one in the 10, no one in the marathon. Women's side, like, yeah, we'll have obviously the class of 800 runners. We'll have a few in there, probably three. Probably the 1500, we'll end up with one athlete.
Women's standard, 159.8 for the women's standard. I don't know how that's so comfortable. When all the other standards have been raised, I think we spoke about that before. It's been lowered. Seems very achievable. But yeah,
that's what I mean. And then yeah, like you just end up like people watching on TV. It's like, oh, Britain only have like 5 athletes at this event in the distance. So it's like, what does that say about, I don't know, aspiring to be a British distance runner? It's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's awful. Look, there were a couple of events that they've got their British athletic standard, like we saw in the indoors. One of them is a steeple. They've kind of, I say lowered, actually made it, you know, they've got a slower standard for it, 818 and a half, 818.5 when the world standard is 815. And then the 10K, 2720, when I think the standard was 2710. So they've slowed it a little bit on the women's side. The only time they've slowed is the 10K to 31.10. So away from the kind of world standard. So, and like we were talking, actually kind of looking at the marathon standard, which by the way, on the women's side, that is quite a chunk, because the world athletics qualifying standard is 30 minutes and 40 seconds. So to slow it to 31.10, pretty sizable chunk. And of course, we know road counts on a 10K as well. So there are women who have already got inside that 31 minutes from Britain, but it's on the road. Obviously, arguments should the road times count, but there we go. Sorry, the standards we think are quite achievable. The marathon, 209.
Yeah, not necessarily achievable, because I don't think we've seen people do it in the past, but in terms of on the world stage, yeah, I think it's... My people like Emil will do it. But it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I do think it's one of the fairer standards if you look at the world, like world athletics and like the sort of times we see, like when you've got people running 201, and then the same with the women, if you've got people running two teens and then to have it standard as 228, they are super achievable. But then, yeah, it's, I wonder how many will actually see get it. I hope with kind of, putting a lot of our hopes in Emil to kind of kick that off.
Yeah. So I think kind of a big, very disappointing to see that they're going to make the team even more exclusive and only take those real kind of high performers and people with potential to get a medal. Because you know, I think you know, their argument was we need to focus on the top, and you know, I feel like
I'd love to know what the top are getting though out of this.
The thing is, it just doesn't
tell me what focus they're actually going to give to these people. I'd also be, I'd be interested, because I'm funny. Josh Kerr, say, is not going to benefit.
It's not going to change. Yeah, it's not going to change. Yeah, it's their lives are already kind of, I mean, it's probably unfair to say like sorted, but nothing's changed for them.
Yeah.
And all it's done is just kind of, I think, damaged the mentalities and the kind of attitudes that people are going to have on that level below. I think it was already, you know, a tall ask when the standards were like got lowered first time around to kind of 13:13 for like the men's 5K, for example. But we responded as a nation, we responded very, very well to that. We've had terrific depth. But I just feel like at British Champs, for example, it's not going to be that exciting.
Well, you just don't even have
to say teams are going to be decided long before the trials.
Yeah.
You know? Pretty much across all events. Yeah.
Yeah. The only ones are probably, like probably the women's 8, men's 15.
That's it.
Only event where we're actually going to like find out the team in the trials. Every other event, you just don't need to turn up then. And what does that say? Like, absolutely ridiculous.
Agreed, man. So yeah, be sure to go and check out that selection policy. But again, yeah, UKA might slowly be ruining for me the status of British champs, because I think it's slowly going to dwindle. Because it's like you say, people haven't got anything to race for these days. And you know, why should someone who's you know, a 10th ranked in the UK go to British champs? Where's the motivation for them when they can just maybe have a weekend off and go pick up a faster race elsewhere? Not saying they should do that. I'm just saying it's very tricky because there is very little motivation for them to go to British champs. So yeah, that's that. And just finally, Trafford 10K this weekend as well on Sunday. So look out for the results for that. But that's our bonus ep. And we've got a nice guest episode on Sunday, haven't we?
Yes, we have. We turn people who's on. Do a little announcement.
Oh, let's think of a clue, mate. Think of a clue.
Think
of a riddle.
We've mentioned them already in this episode. I didn't anyway. But
we've mentioned a lot of people in this episode.
No. I haven't finished yet. We've mentioned them already in this episode, but we won't see them racing that soon due to injury. But when we do, I think it'll be very exciting because they've made some recent changes.
Nice. Nicely put, mate.
That's enough.
Nicely put.
But yeah, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this. And we'll see you on Sunday for our normal Sunday podcast episode.